Hi everyone, welcome back to another episode of Bias Check-In.
Hi everyone from the Free Elf and Susie.
Okay, Free Elf, what are we checking in with?
Well, actually, first things first, before we check in with today's topic, congratulations to the Roosevelt Lakers, MNASU, SIUE, for not only participating, but placing first at the Minnesota State Consulting Challenge this past weekend. Whoop whoop. Very happy to see our own graduate alma mater represented, so we figure we give you a little spotlight.
You were part of the Minnesota Consulting Challenge.
Alas, I was. I went to the last in-person event in 2019, and now they just resumed the in-person event this year. Yes. Well, you participated to the remote one.
A remote consulting challenge, but okay. It was not hosted by Minnesota or any other company. I think this year it was hosted by John Deere.
Yes, every year they partner with an alumnus company or a company in the Twin City area to bring a real case scenario, and our first years ate it, so good job guys and ladies.
Okay, with that
the topic for today is somewhat related, maybe just in my head, but we are looking at how do we make the jump from being learners to teaching others. It all stems from having to design new trainings for our wonderful job. Now that we quit the bad one, how do we manage others? And as we're finalizing our PSYOP presentation,
Which we are behind schedule.
So we're intentionally entering spaces with others, expressing concepts with a captive audience in mind, and we would like people to take something out of it. As probably most of you listening can relate, we know what it's like to sit through a poorly designed lecture, those professional trainings that think that having an animatronics is going to make it any better, or in the worst case scenario, a whole semester of poorly structured lectures. So yeah, we feel that responsibility relatively close. And this is technically a part of IO psychology, training, learning and development, but it's not one which our program focused on particularly, which means we are learning as we go.
Disclaimer, don't take this as a training on how to train. We are just going off our early experiences and wanted to, once again, do an episode on our experience. This is not a how-to.
Comedic purposes, all references are purely casual. Laugh at our misfortune and musings, but... I would not recommend following in our footsteps quite yet. Let us practice first.
But okay, so what's the saying? Those who know do and those who don't know teach?
As she looks at me and is perfectly aware that she's going to be a speaker in my next adjunct class. Okay. What about those who don't know how to teach?
Me. Don't worry about it.
Those who know... do, those who don't know teach, and those who don't know how to teach,
figure it out.
Learn how to Google it.
Yeah. That's some of how higher education is structured, right? Classically. Those who want to teach get specific degrees, like the touch on pedagogy, lesson planning, specifics of their target population, but they might not actually be SMEs in their field. Your third grade math teacher was probably not a mathematician.
Yeah, or if they were a mathematician, maybe teaching third grade wasn't at the top of their aspirations.
Yep. Especially when it's really applied, like third grade math versus multivariate statistics.
Why did I know you were going to mention that? Yes.
Because I love multivariate statistics.
Alas, we do.
On the other side, from undergrad onwards, our instructors are SMEs.
Mm-hmm.
For example, our SME for multivariate statistics, Mike. Mike is an SME.
Mike is the SME, for what I'm concerned, on multivariate. But when it comes to teaching at the undergraduate, graduate, doctoral mm-hmm. level, mm-hmm. very often, because we have learned how to be students by the time we engage with those instructors,
mm-hmm.
their theoretical background on education is also somewhat learned on the go.
Mm-hmm.
You are either a TA during your graduate studies, you adjunct, you shadow your PIs, principal investigators, for those not in academia.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just learn by doing, and you hope that your reviews at the end of the semester don't destroy your ego.
For example, you, adjuncting. You wanted the experience. Talk about the experience.
I flew by the seat of my pants, to quote my favorite musical. And I plan on doing that again. So if you're one of my future students, pretend you didn't hear this episode when it comes to syllabus day, please and thank you. But adjuncting has been interesting. I do still recommend it, but it comes with a much higher degree of uncertainty
mm-hmm.
than one may think.
Mm-hmm.
At least for me, when I was a student in the very same classroom where I tortured my students with an hour-long lectures, it seems that adjuncts had their stuff a lot more together than I felt I had mine. And that was going off of the work of a lot of my mentors. So I received their syllabi, I had gone through the class myself, so I moduled it after what I remember I enjoyed and I benefited from as a junior psych student. The textbook I decided to use came with a ton of publisher and author resources, which is not uncommon among adjuncts to have that kind of background,
mm-hmm.
especially in bigger institutions than where I taught. It's not uncommon for the department to have all of the materials for the class. It's just a matter of who is hired this semester to teach this unit.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side, I will argue this can be detrimental on the long run, because in the ideal best case scenario when it comes to education, we should have the means, the time, the support to develop original materials, or at least update them,
mm-hmm.
target them, make them adaptable to the needs of, if not each student, at least each student group, while retaining the fidelity to learning objectives, institutional goals, assurance of learning, all of the above.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot is just learned on the go. I know for sure when I go back to teaching, I will have to modify some of my materials because, again, I have sat in those classrooms, I've been through those processes. Students mentor younger students. Others will talk and say, hey, last semester, this question was on the quiz.
Mm-hmm.
That question was important on the exam. And I want students to retain those concepts because they're important, not necessarily because we create this tradition of this is what the class looks like, this is what you can expect.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if we had all received more training in pedagogy and training others, would be easier to account for, to work around, to try again, to provide that more targeted training mm-hmm. session to session. Speaking of, did you know the difference between learning objectives and learning goals? Because I only learned the formal difference in educational terminology yesterday. Thank you, Sam. But I would never think that there was a difference between the two.
Thinking of the syllabi I've read, there probably is a difference because they were listed differently. But off the top of my head, no, I don't know what the difference is.
So apparently, because I still have my own healthy skepticism about this, lesson objectives is indicating everything that is to be accomplished during the duration of class.
Okay.
So similarly, semester objectives, course objectives are the activities that need to be completed. Lesson goals, on the other side, is what learners should obtain or get out of the training.
Okay.
So in a basic literacy class, one of the exercises for the lesson objectives could be, let's review the alphabet, let's sound out our words, while a lesson goal would be to empower the learners to be able to do that independently after X amount of hours of practice in class.
Yeah, that tracks.
At the same time, we got out of 22nd grade a hot minute ago, and this is the first time we hear of it.
Yeah.
So it's a whole different shade of English. It's a whole different dimension that we just don't have the means for quite yet. And by we, I mean not only the two of us or IO psychologists necessarily, just the wider non-teaching, non-instructor population. And that also goes back to the point you were making in the differences between the training that we receive to educate and the training we receive to become SMEs into our individual fields, that without that intentional effort, without that practice, keeping up with the publications, some would say without that scientist practitioner model, look at that, there we develop those figures when we see the practitioners that may not remember the basics because school 22nd grade was a hot minute ago, or we may have the instructors that have gone into academia without really having the applied experience and so haven't kept up with industry trends, new processes, the what is the Myers-Briggs of the moment.
Don't say those words.
Saying that with a lot of sarcasm in case for some reason it didn't get through. With that all said, how do we, IO psychologists, do it?
So, thank you for asking. Learning and development is a function within an organization that is responsible for empowering employees' growth and developing their knowledge, skills, and capabilities to drive better business performance. The term learning and development encompasses any professional development a business provides to its employees. It is considered to be a core area of HR because we don't know how important IO is. It should just be a core area of people.
It should be a core area of the organization, full stop.
It's also likely that you've heard it in learning and performance or talent development. Onboarding, for example, new hire programs, career development, ongoing trainings, corporate retreats, universities, leadership development programs, skill trainings, all are all part of this umbrella term of learning and development.
And we also asked our coworkers, our mentors, the educators around us, again, hi Sam, what are some of the considerations that they make when teaching, designing, delivering professional trainings, any and all of the labels that Susie just shared with us. And not all of them necessarily come from that educational background. So these are some of the resources and the food for thought that they shared with us.
Backwards design, going back to those learning goals, step one, and reverse engineering the learning experience from there.
So again, thinking of what do I want people to walk out of my class or out of my webinar with.
And reverse engineering from that.
The other side of this, which is also being stressed more when we talk about remote learning, webinars, Zoom University, is experiential learning. from our first episodes, you know we have been questioning, when not outright critical, of Zoom University and some of its limitations. And that is not changing with online trainings, professional development. Frontal lectures are A, very far from being the only options when designing a learning space. And they can also be very impersonal.
Mm-hmm.
If there is that synchronous interaction, take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. If someone wanted a frontal lecture, they can just go to YouTube. And as part of that, there's a few more considerations to making the interactions and the learning more experiential. So the first thing, and that's something that we also adopt at work, is setting the tone for the space.
Mm-hmm.
Interacting as the first thing that we do when we enter the space. You know, sometimes you have those lectures where even if you tune in exactly at the hour, you're still a little early and there's an awkwardness of, well, I'm just going to go off camera and off mute because, I don't want to talk to y'all.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound like what we do?
No.
And that brings me to a second point. Cameras on wherever possible.
Mm-hmm.
And by wherever possible, meaning make it possible to be present in the space. Black squares are left in the past.
We do popcorn style of like checking in, one word check-ins, and we just popcorn out of each other. Like I call on Claudia, Claudia calls on someone else calls on someone else. Just keeping the conversation going.
Yep. And again.
And that part of keeping the conversation going makes you attentive. You are paying attention. You're part of the group. You know who hasn't gone, who has. And it's really easy to see that you haven't been paying attention.
Yep. I always love when I hear, again, it makes sense. We're all fallible. We're all human. But it's like, oh, wow, you're calling back on me after I spoke. I guess I wasn't that memorable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess I didn't say anything that worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I get to go again?
The other aspect of this, I definitely like that built-in passive attention of a little bit like when we were in grade school and you would count the people ahead of you during the reading exercises so you could know where to get started.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, who's gonna call on me? When am I calling on you? Mm-hmm. It can be very, very effective and also a little bit low pressure because usually those questions are just easy peasy. What has been a good thing that happened this week? What do you want to get out of this space?
Mm-hmm.
No one is usually asked to cure world hunger in popcorn style.
And then we have closing reflections. What did you get out of this? Again, going back to the learning objectives and the learning goals. What stuck with you throughout this?
Why did you spend an hour doing this? Is this just an elective that you have to power through to get your piece of paper?
Mm-hmm.
Or is there something that you can take with you outside of this space again? Mm-hmm. Is there any action item that you might need to take out of this space with you as well? And then finally, I'm a little bit biased because again, this comes from my better half, but when we are looking at competency-based training specifically, so we're trying to very directly influence behaviors and skills rather than necessarily theoretical knowledge, it can also be very useful to work with Bloom's taxonomy of learning, which is, for lack of better terms, and until we figure out how to show you pictures on a podcast, think of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, but for knowledge and demonstrating knowledge and reapplying it.
Cool.
So we start from the most basic level of just remembering, for Susie's example, that 2 + 2 = 4.
Mm-hmm.
We move on to understanding, applying it, analyzing, evaluating, and finally getting to the point of creating original work, original knowledge based on the base concept.
Mm-hmm. So recall the facts and the basic concepts. Then you get to explain ideas or concepts. step further, use that information in new situations, even more so, you draw connections among all of those ideas, you justify a stand or a decision, and you produce a new or an original work or idea from all of that.
And at least in my experience, this has been very useful in understanding where is your audience, where are your students.
Mm-hmm.
It can be frustrating, but when you have majority of a class not remembering a concept,
mm-hmm.
not remembering that we already went over this definition a couple times last lecture, that's a red flag that we need to stay at that step a mm-hmm. little longer.
Yeah.
If we remember it, we understand it, we can then move on to the upper levels of our little taxonomy pyramid.
Talking about Zoom and how L&D functions have evolved to meet the demands of the digital world, this is a great example. We are creating agile workforces, but we need to slow down and start from, remember these concepts, how are we going to create those connections, how are we going to bring you to create these new ideas, to be part of this, whatever training this is for.
Absolutely. And again, thinking of the individual in different systems at different levels, think of us having not only a stationary role in Bloom's taxonomy, but mm-hmm. we will be at different steps on it or at different levels throughout it in different contexts.
Mm-hmm.
So in our job, we are at a certain level. If you set me down to learn chess,
mm-hmm.
I will be all the way back to the base because besides the Queen's Gambit, I do not retain any chess knowledge whatsoever.
Yeah, Queen's Gambit or that scene in Harry Potter.
The main takeaway from that scene is that people playing chess get hurt.
Yes.
So... but popular references aside, again, there's that call for the designer, for the instructor to meet their audience where they're at. Of mm-hmm. course, we would want individuals to move through the phases as quickly as we can, intuitively, and it can objectively be frustrating if the concept is very basic or intuitive to us, to find a way to relate it to someone who may process information differently or just not be inside our heads.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say for me, that is the biggest takeaway.
Yeah. And some vocab we're going to throw your way. Agility, the ability to continually adapt and harness a willingness to try new approaches and reconsider how things are done. A term that's been widely used, not in this episode per se, but in the learning training area, is design thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So design thinking is an effective approach to tackle learning challenges as it considers the user experience and can very quickly start projects that need pilot and rapid prototyping of here, evaluate, analyze, prototype, test. Most importantly, as IOs for learning and development, I think, is the evaluation component.
Mm-hmm.
You must be able to measure, analyze, and validate that what you did
has the effect you meant out mm-hmm. to seek.
Going back to my 2+2, if by the end of your training people think it's 5 or 8,
you might want to go back to the drawing board.
Go back to Bloom's taxonomy. Do they remember? Do they know what 2+2 is?
And so on and so forth. Whenever we mention design thinking and that definition, that also makes me think of that saying, fail often, fail fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit like figure it out, prototype, keep throwing things at the wall, see what sticks, and then go from there.
Absolutely. And going from there?
And going from there, let us know. Did you learn something with this episode? Are you going to remember it by next week's time? Or did you already forget what we talked about last episode? Let us know, send us a message, slide into our DMs, find us on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter at biascheckinpodcast. Send us an email to biascheckin@gmail.com or leave us a voice note and, if you're so inclined, maybe a tip on anchor.fm. That said, let us know. How do you learn? What are your success stories when it comes to trainings? What are some of the things that maybe you didn't enjoy so much from that 8-hour company-wide mandated seminar? Looking forward to hear from y'all.
Happy PsyOp month. We'll see you at PsyOp in T-minus 1 week.
9 days.
Talk to you later.
In the meanwhile, moist regards.